My name is Mike Thornton, and this is Full Logic Reverse.
Jerry Mander is now with us from the International Forum on Globalization in San Francisco, California. Mr. Mander, are you there?
Yes, I am. Sorry for the mix-up in the switchboards here.
Well, I'm one of those people that if that's the worst thing that happens to us today, I think we're in pretty good shape. You know what I mean?
Indeed.
Absolutely. Well, we are speaking with Jerry Mander, who is the acting director of the International Forum on Globalization, also a member of their board of directors. Mr. Mander, let me ask you, can you let our listeners know about the International Forum on Globalization?
Well, the International Forum on Globalization is a new association of about 60 activists, writers, authors, thinkers, economists, and people who are part of, you know, major organizations in environment, consumer rights, worker rights, labor, health, and small business and so on, from about 20 different countries. And we gather together in meetings, and we began meeting about 5 years ago, 4 years ago, in the run-up to the NAFTA vote. And what binds us together is a deep feeling that the economic globalization is the wrong path. It's going to lead to exactly the opposite results that have been trumpeted for it, that it's not going to benefit people's lives, it's going to harm people's lives, and it's going to be disastrous for the environment, among other things, which we can get into as we go. And we've been having a series of public teach-ins. We had a very large one in New York, a very large one in Washington, D.C., one in San Francisco, and actually 2 weeks from now we'll be having one in Toronto, Canada, to try to lay out the multidimensionality of the problems of globalization, which has been kind of sold to us as this panacea for all problems, an economic system that was going to lift all boats. So far it seems to me lifting yachts only. And so this group is getting together to try to bring that information to a wider public, and most of us are writers, and there are quite a few books on the subject that we've all put together.
Mr. Mander, before we get into talking about globalization, I know that I was at the teach-in in San Francisco. I was
in Berkeley.
Yes, and it was really good. I mean, I really had my eyes open to I think what this is all really about, which is a rising tide lifting all yachts, as you so well put it. But I have to go somewhere else, because I just knew of you from being involved with the International Forum on Globalization. But it has come to my attention that you've done some pretty famous work with some people that I know prior to your being involved with them. And one of those things being you did a book on four reasons for the elimination of television?
Yes, well, I've written three books. The first one that you're referring to there is called Four Arguments for the Elimination of Television. That was written in 1977. And then I did another one in 1991 called In the Absence of the Sacred. And then I have a new one out now. It's called The Case Against the Global Economy. It's published by Sierra Club Books. And that's in bookstores now. But I have only lately begun to realize that all three books are very much related. The book on television, although it presents many, many, many kinds of arguments, going from the personal effects of television to effects on family to the political effects and so on, really was about, at the core, it was about the homogenization of global consciousness, about the fact that everybody's sitting at their screens night after night after night in dark rooms, gathering in these images, are absorbing an information field being sent by very, very few people who have corporate interests in mind and who want to, you know, get everybody to kind of live and see the world in exactly the same way. And that this is a global system that's now upon us. We have 70% of the globe is doing this also. And what we're getting is a kind of global consciousness within the dimensions of corporate consumer culture, and it's homogenizing cultures and destroying diversity in very many ways. In the Absence of the Sacred, which came along later, was a kind of continuation, although I didn't really think of it that way. It was about many other technologies and how they, you know, from television to computers to airplane travel to automobiles to Disney World to space travel to genetic engineering, and how these technologies are all kind of conspiring to separate people from nature and to further alienation. And so while the TV is speaking into their brains, the rest of this technological system is removing people from the sources of their reality and kind of making their lives, while they seem to be more comfortable, it's kind of speeding them up into a kind of a hyper virtual world, you might say, of separation from the earth. And the third book, The Case Against the Global Economy, really is about who has benefited from all this. And the fact that people have been isolated in their houses with their television sets and have lost touch with the sources of their wisdom and knowledge and are strapped onto the wheel of consumption and so on. And that now the global economic system is being redesigned so that this kind of commodity culture can be accelerated into all people's homes. We now are having a redesign of the global economic system for the benefit of the corporations that can control it from essentially offshore. They are able to dominate not only human beings, but even governments now. And this is something we heard from the right wing during the recent election campaign, and talking about the loss of national sovereignty because of the GATT and the NAFTA and the WTO agreement. But we also hear it from the left, from Ralph Nader and people like that. It's kind of across-the-board critique, except the trouble is the general public hasn't fully understood this yet, and so it's really crucial that people begin to understand how these systems work. So those three books, I think, I view almost as a trilogy, starting with the television book.
We're talking with Jerry Mander, author and international activist, as well as acting director of the International Forum on Globalization. My name is Mike Thornton. This is Full Logic Reverse. You're tuned to community-supported radio, KVMR-FM, Nevada City, Sacramento, and Auburn. Mr. Mander, let me ask you, I'm still thinking about what you were talking about, this homogenization of culture, and I can't remember whether it was Helena Norberg Hodge or Vandana Shiva or both who basically termed this as monoculture of the mind.
Well, that's Vandana Shiva's term, but what we're looking at is monoculturization of everything.
Right.
The television serves to kind of monoculturize the global consciousness, that is to say, to get everybody vibrating with the same information, everybody adopting the same values, so that people living in grass houses in Borneo and people living in Las Vegas and people living in New York City and people living in the north of Canada and people living in South America are seeing the same images, often at the same time, and all these images, and mainly commercial images, and Western ideas of how to live life, and that homogenization of mind it's tragic. It's not only dangerous, which I'll get to a little later, but it's also just tragic. I mean, one of the great things about the world is the diversity of cultures and the exotic places we used to be able to go to and so on. And this is all becoming made into the same kind of McDonald's, automobile crazed, homogenized commodity culture world. And it's not voluntary. People think everybody wants this to be taking place. I don't believe that. It's just being presented as the only viable system. And very often it's destroying local economies, which are very, very viable in many, many places. This is particularly true in the agricultural realm. Now, what Vandana was talking about was largely monocultural, was agricultural monoculture, even though she called it monoculture of the mind. What's happening on farms around the world, especially because of the global economy, is that giant corporations are now free to enter every country of the world without any opposition due to the new law, the rules of free trade. They can enter anywhere, buy up gigantic tracts of formerly diverse farmland from peasants or individuals or small farmers, family farmers, and who may have been growing very, very diverse crops in very traditional ways, and getting along just fine, having enough to eat, sharing food with their neighbors, engage in bartering systems, and sometimes enough left over to do a little marketing of their surplus products. And that diversity in agriculture has been replaced now by corporate agriculture, which is very machine-intensive and pesticide-intensive, very few people working on the land. The people who used to work on the land are being driven off the land into urban situations. Meanwhile, the food that's being, or the crops that are being produced are monocultural crops where there formerly were diversity. They're producing you know, miles of soybeans or coffee or cattle for export to send across to the United States or some other place. Meanwhile, the former diverse biological system that represented the farms is being wiped out. Pesticides are going into the water. The people are being driven into cities. The cities are becoming overcrowded. This is in turn causing violence within cities. And this is also in turn causing migration and cross-border immigration. And this is what we're facing now from the large cause of the immigration from Mexico that many people decry. And yet we've had a role in creating that by our corporations going there and buying up all the small farmlands and driving people off their farms and into the migration pattern. So this is what I mean by monoculture. This monoculturization, this turning diversity into monoculture, is at the root cause of many of our ecological problems, many of our social problems, and the homogenization of the mind that's going on through mass media and through corporate domination of information is doing it right in people's heads. So it's a bad scene.
Well, I would agree with you on that. Let me let the listeners know that we're talking with Jerry Mander of the International Forum on Globalization. You're tuned to Community Supported Radio, KVMR FM, Nevada City, Sacramento, and Auburn. My name is Mike Thornton. This is Full Logic Reverse. Mr. Mander, why? I mean, I think I know. I mean, we cover an awful lot of media issues here on this program, but the people in the United States are just woefully ignorant about what is being done to the world economy. I mean, can you try and give our listeners an encapsulation, if you will, of this thing that we refer to as globalization? Because I'd like us to talk about that if we can, and then also move to what people are doing to attempt to resist this almost unstoppable juggernaut.
Well, on the question of unstoppable, which is the last thing you said, that's only a mindset, you know. I think anything is stoppable, and so I'll just start out by saying that. Once people get the idea and they realize the full dimension of the problem, that they can stop it. But as far as what globalization consists of, it's really a design system. It really came out of the Bretton Woods meetings during the 1940s. The famous Bretton Woods meetings, where the largest corporations in the world and the chief economists of the Western industrial nations and the political leadership of the Western industrial nations gathered together at Bretton Woods, and they said, "We're just coming out of this war. What kind of economic system are we going to have in the future?" And I think that they thought of themselves as do-gooders. You know, I really thought that they intended to design a system which would be beneficial to people and keep everybody out of war. But their modus operandi was to turn the system into a corporate-controlled system and to move us into an era that we can now call an era of corporate rule. And by that I mean they redesigned the economic arrangements to promote free trade, so that is to say no controls over corporate trade, so that a nation cannot stop corporations from doing what they want. Privatization, turning what was formerly government projects to private. Deregulation, so there's no ability for countries to control what takes place. Created institutions like the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund and the General Agreement on Tariffs and Trade, most recently the NAFTA agreement that we've heard so much about. All of these systems designed to speed up the exploitation of resources, the ability of corporations to override national laws, the integration of all economies in the world into the same system, and a new set of trade rules, which really become political rules in that they allow for the trade bureaucracies like the GATT and the NAFTA, which are located in places like Geneva and Brussels, and comprised primarily of corporate members, to actually convene and overrule U.S. laws and any other country's laws that are felt to slow down trade. Now, we've already had a lot of this in the United States. We already have the Marine Mammal Protection Act seriously threatened by challenges under the GATT. We have the Clean Air Act seriously threatened. We have the raw log export ban seriously threatened. That's a terrible one, because it means we can't process our logs, you know, and create jobs. It means the logs themselves get shipped overseas and somebody else processes them. We've had threats to the Delaney Clause, the pesticide clause in California, to the automobile emission standards. All of these are being challenged, and many others that I don't have time to go into, are being challenged by these trade bureaucracies as being restraints of free trade. And in fact, what they are attempts by government and citizen groups to protect the environment, or protect our air, or protect, in other cases, protect our workers, protect public health, and protect our labor standards. And instead, what happens is those countries, we sue other countries to get them to lower their standards. They sue us to get us to lower our standards, all through these trade bureaucracies, which have, by these trade agreements that were signed by all these governments, real power to overrule U.S. laws. We got a ratcheting down of standards across the board, environment, labor, consumer health, public health, and so on. That's why you see all these big fights when they're talking about Fast Track and NAFTA. You see all these big fights where they want environmental side agreements and they want labor side agreements, because the agreements themselves allow this incredible reduction of standards. And so people are desperately trying to introduce other elements, but they're failing. The side agreements that were attached to NAFTA and the which have to do with labor standards and environment are farce, complete farce. They've had no effect at all, and it's just meant to get us to not see the true picture of what's actually happening. It's very, very, very horrible. So this new trading system was supposed to increase global economic activity by $250 billion in a very, very short time, which it's not doing, and that this would have tremendous benefits for all people. This is the trickle-down theory. This is about how it's going to lift all boats. And as I said earlier, what it really does is only lift the yachts. It really only lifts the powers and the money of the people who designed the system, which are these large corporations who benefit from it. Meanwhile, the environmental effects are terrible. You're getting this homogenization of culture. You're getting a diminution of democracy when we can't even control our own laws. You're having terrible effects in agriculture, as I described, with the monoculturization and the immigration. It's not lifting people out of poverty, quite the opposite. It's actually threatening jobs all over the world, because it's requiring that workers lower their wages in order to be able to appeal to the global trading system. So U.S. workers have to lower their wages to match the challenge of Mexican and Korean workers. And Korean workers have to keep their wages down, too, because, or Thai workers or Malaysian workers have to keep their wages down, too, because if their wages get too high, corporations will shop someplace else. So there's a constant drive to keep wages down. It's not good for the third world, either. People say that it is. Most third world countries have been very against this, but then we kind of dragged into it. And what you get in the end is a kind of rule by corporations, a rule by the standards that corporations operate by, and that's kind of the big picture. They describe it as a utopian system, and it's really only a corporate utopia.
What we wind up with, of course, is a rush to the bottom
on
everything. And while GATT and NAFTA have brought the world along this road this far, my understanding is the multilateral agreement on investment is, if passed, is going to be almost on some level
much worse,
almost the final nail in the coffin.
You're absolutely right, and very few people know anything about that. Very few people have even heard of that multilateral investment agreement. I'm very impressed that you're so knowledgeable about it, because it's just barely begun to crack the surface of consciousness, even among activist groups, as a really dangerous system. And I'll just say a word about what that is. That's a new system which will essentially apply the rules of free trade to financial investment. That will mean that the largest currency traders, the largest banks in the world, will be able to enter any country in the world. Let's say the largest banks in the world will enter Thailand. And because of their great size, they'll be able to buy up all the Thai banks. And so the banks in Thailand will now be controlled by, let's say, Chase Manhattan Bank or Lloyd's of London or something like that. And it formerly was the case that Thailand could create laws to keep out foreign banks in order to be able to control its own economy, in order to be able to control what kinds of investments are made in Thailand, what kinds of things are culturally appropriate, what kind of tourism that they want to have, what kind of, you know, what kind of urban designs they may want to have, what kind of resource exploitation they may want to have. And now all that's taken out of their hands because they're not allowed to make rules to control that, and the financial investors are not allowed to be kept out. So you get foreign banks operating on completely non-Thai principles, let's say, operating according only to profit standards. And at the point where profit is not so good, they just leave and go to another country. And so these countries are going to become ghost countries, the poverty level is going to, the currencies are being fouled up incredibly. We already see that happening in Southeast Asia. And then the role of currency speculators because of this. Currency is also being put completely free trade oriented now, so that a few giant currency speculators like George Soros and a few other people are able now, especially with the new technologies of communication like global computer networks, are able to push a key on their computer and move billions and billions of dollars from a bank in London, say, to a bank in Jakarta. And the net result is that a day later they start cutting down some gigantic forest. This has sped up the rate of financial resource movement beyond any possible expectation before this. Or else the currency speculator will decide, okay, we did that, we made a win on the different values of these currencies between those. No, then they'll move back out, and the currency will crash, causing terrible, terrible havoc. And the role of currency speculators, because of the new global communication systems, has become very dominant in what happens economically within many, many countries of the world.
And what will happen is that they will make and break whole national and regional economies.
This is happening. We see it happening. It happened in Mexico a couple of years ago. We just recently in the news, we saw these examples in Thailand and Malaysia and I think the Philippines. And it's all from, a lot of it is from currency speculation. And when the MIA comes into power, the MAI, which is also a parallel agreement, this process will accelerate tremendously because the last vestiges of control over these processes will be eliminated.
And the corporate-dominated media does everything it can to keep people. I mean, I hear them talking about fast-track trade agreements. I haven't heard the word MAI mentioned once in any of the news coverage.
It's barely ever mentioned. You may find it occasionally deep in the financial pages, but the public has no idea that this is of the vast dangers involved in this.
We're talking with Jerry Mander of the International Forum on Globalization. Mr. Mander, we just have a few minutes left, and I'd like, if you can, to talk about the resistance to this corporate globalization of the planet. We have had on the program Roberto Cobaria, who is in the United States now, I believe, who is chief of the UWA, who have now threatened to commit suicide if their lands are exploited.
Yes.
And the Zapatistas really are on many levels, I think, sort of at the point of what economic globalization is doing to poor indigenous rural
corn farmers in Mexico.
Absolutely. Can you talk, if you will, about the resistance that's mounting to this and then let our listeners know what they can do to get more information?
Well, not to tout our own organization, but we are the first one that has been set up specifically to deal with informing people about what's possible and what kinds of things they can do about economic globalization. So I'll give people that address, and I think we have a newsletter and we have other opportunities for people to find out information. We will send packets of information to people, and they can learn a lot fast through the International Forum on Globalization. Our address is 1555 Pacific, San Francisco 94109. The phone number is 415-771-3394, and there's a fax 415-771-1121. And I would suggest people write to this organization, that's the best thing, and ask for information about membership and what kinds of, we can send you some of our newsletters, which are very, very informative. The new one is about the new global financial system, and the next one will be about global resistance to this, in fact. There's quite a few good books to read. I would recommend The Case Against the Global Economy, which is meant to be a comprehensive reader, put together by myself and Teddy Goldsmith and featuring about 15 of the IFG members. That's published by Sierra Club Books, and that's available. There are many other good books on different dimensions of the subject. Another very good book is called When Corporations Rule the World by David Corton. I strongly recommend that one. Another one by William Grider about globalization called Globalization Ready or Not is a good book. Other organizations, many organizations are now becoming extremely active on global issues. If people have access to the Sierra Club, is becoming active on globalization issues. Many environmental organizations, Public Citizen, Ralph Nader's organization in Washington is very, very active. A lot of farm groups are very, very active. Sometimes the best way to become active is either to hook up with one of these large organizations or else hook up with some small organizations where you are. I think in the Sacramento, Nevada City area, there are a lot of organizations called CSA, which are small organizations attempting to help organic farmers stay out of the larger global farming system and to be able to operate in a more integrated local fashion. And I would recommend checking out whatever you can find on community-supported agriculture groups. There are a lot of local money systems that are beginning to develop, where people will actually partly stand aside from the money economy and create their own kind of currencies to deal with as an alternative system. But, you know, the IFG can get you resource lists of both books and organizations, and probably can help you find one in your own area if you want to call and get that kind of information. If you do want to do that, I would call a woman named Stephanie Welch, who kind of clears that kind of information for the most part.
And could you give the phone number one more time,
yes,
please?
Yes, the IFG phone number is 415-771-3394. And ask for Stephanie Welch for more information.
Jerry Mander of the International Forum on Globalization, as well as activist and author on a global scale, to use the appropriate term here. I really want to thank you for being on the program
today.
Well,
it's my pleasure.
And hopefully we can have you on again at some point
anytime
in the future.
More.
My name is Mike Thornton, and thank you for joining us today on Full Logic Reverse.